Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
With no Patriots this weekend, the owner told us last Friday that he would watch games on TV, maybe even go to a college game. Were there any football-related activities for the quarterback over the weekend?
Sure. Yeah, I watched some of the games on Sunday. I don't have the there was no NFL Sunday ticket where I was staying, but I saw the whatever the national game was. Who was it?
Jets San Diego?
I saw Jets San Diego. I saw portions of the highlights of the Dolphins Broncos, which was a hell of a game too. So it was fun. You know, it's always fun to sit back and watch, you know, the different teams play. You don't have the luxury of doing that, and certainly to watch a TV copy of the game and to hear the commentators. But you know, I love watching football. It's a great way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
How much more ignorant are we watching on television, the television coverage of the game, versus what you're able to watch when you watch game film?
Well, it's really hard for the viewer to understand what a team is trying to do. You know, in some plays, you may, you know, a running back gets stopped for no gain, and you know, there wasn't much there. Well, there's a reason why there wasn't much there. Maybe, you know, one of the calls by an offensive lineman got miscommunicated. Instead of going to the middle linebacker, you went to the strong side linebacker, and you know, there's things like that where even the commentators don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the hard part about football. It's very much a chess match, and you don't really get that by watching a TV copy of a game. A lot of times you just end up following the ball, you know, which is what they have to show. But there's always a game within a game on the football field, and there's individual matchups that are won on a play-by-play basis that ultimately you put enough of those together, and then, you know, you either stop a team from scoring points or the offense scores points.
Tom, what really struck me about that San Diego Jets game was the last couple of minutes when Phillip Rivers was trying but not succeeding in running that two-minute offense very, very well. And I know you're not going to throw Phillip Rivers under the bus here, but I'd like to compare and contrast how it was you were able in 2 minutes and 31 seconds with your guys to call every single play seamlessly, quickly, efficiently. There were no penalties. You went 8 for 9. You weren't looking at O'Brien saying, hey, what's the play? Versus what we saw Phillip Rivers, who by most accounts is a pretty good quarterback, struggle to get it done in the two-minute drill.
Yeah, Phillip's a damn good quarterback, and they've got one of the best offenses in the league. They always do. So, you know, I don't know what was happening or what was going on. I know it's a situation that we work on a weekly basis, and, you know, what we practice is usually how it goes in the game. I mean, if we communicate well with whatever it may be, hand signals or voice commands or communication up front with the offensive line, when we communicate in general, we do really well because everyone's coordinated. Everyone's doing the right thing. When it's not, and one guy's doing one thing and another guy's doing another thing, it's hard to execute. You know, it's hard to execute, you know, to gain a yard. It's hard to get back to the line of scrimmage if all 11 guys aren't on the same page. Defensive football is a little bit different. I mean, you can have a guy screw up and then, look, another Dwight Freeney sacks a quarterback, and it really doesn't matter. Offensively, you know, you can't blow it on a play and expect to gain many yards.
Hey, Tom, we once asked Dennis Eckersley, you know, when he's watching a game and the announcer's saying, oh, that was a cutter, or that was a two-seamer, do they know what they're talking about? And he said they have no clue. Even the former players don't know what they're talking about. When you watch, do you think the announcers know what they're talking about? And if so, who are some of the guys you think make sense and understand what they're watching?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do. I think a lot of the commentators do a good job. It's you know, I always tell my wife I speak two languages, English and football. And because football has its own language. I mean, I can call a play and tell you a defensive front and a coverage, and no one would know what I'm talking about except, you know, the guys that have played and the guys that communicate in that type of verbiage. So it's a lot of times, and even talking to Phil Simms, who ends up doing a lot of our games,
right?
You know, I always talk to him about it, and he says, you know, you can't use the football terms. You can't use cover two. You know, he goes, you know, I never use cover two on TV, which I find really interesting, because if you say cover two, you know, every single football player would know exactly what you're talking about. But look, if you haven't played in a long time, it's hard to understand what that means. So he ends up saying, well, there was double coverage on this receiver, which, you know, everyone can pretty much understand that. So, you know, a lot of it is you're watching, and certain other commentators really get into it much deeper than that, but, you know, that's why Phil Simms is one of the best. I always enjoy watching him and Jim Nance because, like I said, you have a relationship with those guys over the years.
Well, what's something that, and I'll tell you my pet peeve, and maybe it's from, you know, listening and talking to you over the years, but when guys say things like Terry Bradshaw said after the Cowboys won big the other day, that this is what they're striving for, balance. Romo only threw 25 times. That's how you win. And I'm thinking, he only threw 24 times because they had a lead, and they weren't coming from behind, and they were killing the clock, and they were reacting to the defense. When we look at the offense, when you hear guys say that all the time, Mike Ditka's famous, you know, you got to establish the run and stop the run. I'm like, that's not what you do. You throw the ball if they give you, you know, if they load up in the box, you're going to throw the ball. And this is Mike Ditka, a coach, a player, a Hall of Famer. When you're watching, what is the one thing that they get wrong most of all?
Well, I think, like I said, it's part of it's trying to simplify who their audience is. You know, and like you said, a lot of people who maybe follow the game have a little bit more knowledge than the very casual weekend fan. But, you know, it's like you said, that's a great example. You say, well, when they load the box, you throw the ball. Well, to me, there's 100 different ways to load the box, you know, to you know, have extra defensive guys down in the front in order to stop the run and force the quarterback to throw the ball. Well, sometimes it's harder to throw the ball that way. You know, sometimes, you know, you'd rather see a really generic zone defense than a man defense where they are loading the box and stopping the run. Every game plays itself out very differently. So when someone says you stop the run, you know, and you've got to run the ball, and that's how you win games, or the defense, you know, wins these championships. You know, that's
right.
I mean, there's tons of different things that you can talk about generically, yeah, that over the course of a long football season, balance is very important. Now there's certain teams where you want to throw the ball 70% of the time. You know, there's certain teams where you want to throw it 40% of the time based on what their strengths are, what your strengths are. So generically, you know, you can't come up with one thing over the course of an entire season. But, you know, in a specific game, you know, there was some stat Billy was telling me, you know, when we run the ball like 25 plus times, you know, we have some ridiculous win-loss, you know, ratio percentage, something like that. You know, but, okay, so does that mean if you hand the ball off on the first 25 plays of the game, you're going to win the game?
Well, that's what Mike Ditka says. You know, you run the ball, you win the game. And it just doesn't work that way, does it?
No, you got to watch the game, and you see the situational plays that may come up. I mean, everyone says turnovers. Yeah, turnovers are very important. But, look, if you have a third down play and you know, you have a guy open and you miss him, to me, that's a turnover. It doesn't matter if it's intercepted or not. I mean, you know, the punter could punt it. They run it. You know, you have a 10-yard net punt, or you have a 20-yard interception. Well, is a turnover a big factor in a game? You know, or is it, you know, the field position? So there's a lot of different ways to evaluate the game, and you got to watch the entire game play out so that, you know, there's a certain handful of plays that obviously turn the tide in every game, but you know, you can't pin one thing down and say this is why or this is why not.
Hey, Tom, the physical tools of Tim Tebow and how they will or will not transfer to the National Football League have been discussed and dissected. I'd like to go beyond that with you. Where is Tebow right now after one start in the National Football League with his mental grasp of the game? And I don't mean specifically, but where would you be one game in? What is there more things he doesn't understand than he does?
Well, you know, honestly, I have not had a chance to see him play very much. We haven't played many of the same opponents. So it's hard for me to really evaluate. I mean, I obviously, Coach Belichick's pretty good friends with Urban Meyer, and Urban's come up and seen our team, and we obviously have a lot of Gators, so there's been a lot of Florida games on over the years. And you know, Aaron Hernandez had a great relationship with him. And, you know, it's hard to, like I said, when you watch, you know, two or three highlights, you can't really say, oh, this is the reason why, or, you know, he's going to be, you know, John Elway, or he's going to be whoever it may be. I mean, it's, can't tell after one game. I know, you know, myself, in my second, third year. You know, I mean, you're a long way from where you're going to be as a player. And I've learned so much. I'm still learning. This is my 12th year. And there's not a game that I play in that I don't learn something, that I don't gain valuable experience from. So it's a long process for a quarterback. And, you know, we're all trying to get better on a weekly basis. And the important part for a quarterback is not to regress. It's not to, you know, have a great game one week and then a crappy game the next. You know, the level of consistency and dependability from the quarterback position is extremely important to every NFL team, because you've got to be able to rely on your quarterback to, on a consistent basis, do the right thing, make the decisions that are going to help the team win, because you hold the ball in your hand every single play. I mean, you've got a big influence on the game. So if you're making bad decisions with the ball, then it's hard for the team really to overcome that.
Tom, you've already dealt with Revis, the offense has. You're soon to deal with Polamalu. Can you compare and contrast those two players, how they're alike, how they're different?
Yeah, they're very different players. You know, Troy is a phenomenal player. I mean, I watched a bunch of his highlights with Coach Belichick yesterday in our film study, and he's as good as he's ever been. He flies around the field. He's incredibly fast and instinctive. He covers a lot of ground out there, so you have to keep your eyes on him on every play. I'd say he's more comparable to Ed Reed than Revis. Revis, you know, they kind of put Revis on the receiver and they say, all right, you know, take this guy out of the game, and he does a hell of a job of that. With Troy, it's not as much man coverage, so he's in a zone, but you know, when he should be in one part of the field, he's reading the quarterback, he ends up being another part of the field, and the quarterback throws it there, and then, you know, he makes plays that very few guys in the league can make. So, you know, I really enjoy playing against him. He's a great competitor. He's one of the nicest guys you've ever met in the NFL. And you know, we've had some great games with them over the years. So,
well, he was fined. I'm sure you've heard, $10,000 for calling his wife on a cell phone to tell her he's okay after a head injury.
Yeah,
does that make sense to you?
There's a lot of fines, you know, thrown around these days that we don't have much control over. So you always got to be careful what you say about fines, and because you'll get a fine letter. And you start, if players talk about fines, we get fined. So, you know, it's best to kind of keep our mouths shut.
Would you ever do that? Would you ever consider, you know, like, you know, calling your wife during the game, maybe, you know, just checking in? Honey, you need anything on the way home?
Quart of milk.
Not if I was going to get fined, I'd have someone else text.
Hey, Tom, we kicked this little debate around earlier in the week. If you're going to start a defensive team, and it can't be a Patriot you're going to draft, you can draft any defensive player from any other of the 31 teams in the National Football League, who would be your choice? I assume the candidates would be a Polamalu, a Revis, a Sue, a Ware, or maybe somebody else we haven't thought of. Who would be your first-round draft pick to pluck off of another team?
Oh, my God. It's impossible. That's impossible to answer. I mean, there's not one player that makes a team or a defense. I mean, I've played against, you know, who I think, Dwight Freeney and Jason Taylor, that two of the best defensive players I've ever played against, you know, that have an impact on every game. But, you know, look, I'm the quarterback. So, you know, the pass rush and them forcing the quarterback to make quick decisions is, you know, that's what defenses try to do. So I'm sure receivers could care less about a pass rusher. They're probably more worried about a cornerback, and an offensive line is probably more worried about, you know, an interior guy. So, it's too tough to answer.
Hey, you've often told us you'd like to play in your 40s. You have no thoughts about, you know, hanging it up anytime soon, and why would you? But everyone thinks about what they're going to do when they're done, if they're smart. If I give you your choice to follow other quarterbacks, retiring quarterbacks, into a second career, would it be TV, like Boomer Esiason, Dan Marino, Phil Sims? Would it be coaching, like your fellow Michigan man, Jim Harbaugh? Or would it be business, be an entrepreneur like Drew Bledsoe or Roger Staubach or so many others? Which way would you go?
Well, all those guys, I've watched Dan Marino for years, and look at John Elway's doing now.
That's true. Cool. You could go front office like Elway. That would be the way to go.
Yeah, those guys work pretty hard, man. It's to be successful in the NFL, and I see what it takes from Coach Belichick and his level of commitment to this team and organization. and what Mr. Kraft and Johnson put in and running the team, it's all day, every day, you know, and us football players, we got a pretty good thing. I mean, we play a sport we love and we get quite a bit of free time, you know, in the off season. We play in front of 70,000 people and get paid a lot of money. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. So whatever I choose to do after I play is not going to be anything like what I'm doing now. And I love playing. I love the game. I think about the game every day. It's only become more fun for me over the years as I've understood more. It's just a great game. The more you understand it and the more you learn about it, and the changes that from game to game, from week to week, it's just the best. So I don't have any desire to stop playing anytime soon. It's going to be a long time. So, and I honestly, I never even really thought about after I'm done playing, because, you know, that's a long time down the road.
How about surfing in Costa Rica and like sitting on the beach drinking beer?
See, that's pretty good, but yeah. I'm able to do that now. and to think about doing that, 365 days a year is not quite as appealing. I like to do it for, 2 weeks and then get back to training. So, everything is balanced for me. That's something I've definitely learned over the years, is to be a bit more balanced in my life, and that has really helped my, not really pacing yourself, but having a little bit better perspective, and then knowing when you really got to, put the pedal to the metal.
Tom, you love the game so much. I assume that means you'd like your boys to play football?
I always say yes. My wife always says they're going to be what they're going to be, which, of course, that is the truth. They have a mind of their own, but, they both love playing, so it's going to be hard to keep them off the field, I think.
What about a goal, a bucket list kind of goal when you're done? Would it be to get your handicap down there? Like, Aaron Rodgers broke par this offseason. I don't know how a guy does that during his career. How does a guy get to scratch during his career? Would you like to do that? Is that a goal after you're done?
Well, I love, like I said, golf. I love golf, but, I don't love it. I mean, to be out there every day, I don't love it that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's fun. It's a fun hobby. To play once a week, is just fun for me. Anything more than that, the thing that I like to do every day is train and get ready to play. And, during the football season, it's 6 months. It's every day of the week that you're either getting ahead or you're catching up on things or you're getting prepared for next week's opponent or the week after that opponent. So it's just, we're on a treadmill that's going pretty fast. And when that treadmill stops, it's very abrupt. And that's what it feels like in the off season, and really, there's no desire to make that a long term thing. It's really I enjoy so much of what I do that to think about golf or surfing or any other hobby I might have, it doesn't really match up to what I'm doing now. So,
Tom, what was the non-football highlight of the bye week for you?
I was with my kids. We went on vacation to the Bahamas, and I was with my wife and my kids, and just to see them play and to build sandcastles on the beach, you never think it'd be this much fun, and you realize how much your mom and dad really love you, when you're able to spend some time with your kids, and we have memories that I'll never forget. So,
did the paparazzi spot you on the beach?
I'm looking at TMZ right now, and I can't find any pictures.
No.
You won't find anywhere we were at. It was tough to get there. But, we caught some lobsters. My son, we put the lobster in the boat. It's pretty cool how they do it. But we put the lobster in the boat, and he was crying. He was so scared of the lobster. Oh, man, we have some pictures of that. I'll have to remind him of that when he's older.
Speaking of pictures, did you see Gronkowski's pictures?
No, but I've heard. He never ceased to amaze me. I would have guessed there'd be pictures of him, somehow with a shirt off or posing or something like that. So I'm just glad I'm no longer, the one that people are making fun of on my team on a daily basis. Gronk is definitely pulled into the lead there.
Would you be surprised if when Gronk gets back in the facility, Burr says, Coach would like to speak to you about that?
he's used to that walk into coach's office now. He probably already knows it's coming.
When you were young and single, did you carry around your game jersey?
Just in case you met a new friend?
the Gronkowski travel pack?
Yeah.
There's a jersey and a football to throw around at the pool with the Hard Rock or something when he's out there. So he has more fun than anybody, I'll tell you that. He doesn't miss a fun day.
Do you think, I mean, I know you guys will have some laughs, but will someone above you, above your pay grade, pull him into an office somewhere down there and have a word with him and say, listen, I know you're having a good time, but you got to be careful? Does that happen?
Yeah, and Gronk is, I mean, he's single, he's young, and he's making his own decisions. So it's hard for Coach to, you know, he talks to us every time, we head out for an extended vacation about our decision making and so forth. And I'm sure he'll have something to say to Rob, but the players, they'll probably be asking, you know, more details of the jersey that the girl was wearing or something like that.
Did you eat that lobster, and did that really horrify the kid?
I know. Well, I don't think he correlated those two between what I was eating and that, but he didn't like it so much when that thing was moving around in the boat. He jumped up and he was crying, and you know, we had to jump in from the water to kind of hold him and make sure nothing was going to happen. So it's just one of those experiences that you had that, you know, you'll always remember, because, you know, it's the first time we ever got a chance to do something like that, and it was a lot of fun.
Tom, good conversation. Good luck against Pittsburgh. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, guys. Have a good week.